Know you've been a good friend, been there through the thick and thin, and I know it's never gonna end. Cause you've been a good friend.
Welcome to the Speak Up Talk Radio Network. I am your hostess, Pat Rulo. We bring you hand-selected hosts, podcasts, and talk radio programming with listening options, 24/7 streaming, or listen on demand. We also feature one-on-one segments with important guests, people who have something to say that you need to hear. And if you are an author listening to today's interview and would like to be featured on the network, please visit speakuptalkradio.com for all of the details or contact us at pr@speakuptalkradio.com. Well, here's a question for you. Several questions. What would a dog write about Woodstock? Or a near-death experience? Traveling with his dad? Or their love for each other? Well, I have the answers today, because with me I have a photographer who lends his dog a voice, and I'm thrilled to have a fellow Clevelander with me. He is Bob Soltis. Bob is the co-author of A Lucky Life. A former Navy officer, he has been a photographer since 1967, when his aunts gave him a camera for Christmas. Later, he joined students at his high school who walked out to protest a teacher's strike that would have prevented them from graduating. The local paper bought his pictures, launching a career documenting life's joy and humor. After his aging dog, Lucky, collapsed in the Colorado mountains in 2015, Bob helped Lucky tell his story. And Bob is here, and so is Lucky, right now. So welcome to the network, Bob.
Thank you. Glad to be here, and thank you for having me. And you could probably hear Lucky in the background there, so he says hello, too.
And that's fine. We're glad to have him as part of our interview today.
You want to say hello, Lucky? Do you have things to say? Okay, maybe not.
Maybe later. Well, now, Bob, your story is told by Lucky, your Jack Russell Terrier, a 15-year-old rescue dog. And I saw a picture on your website in front of Eddie's Grill in Geneva, and we mentioned that prior to the air. Geneva on the Lake is one of my favorite places of all time. And I'm betting that I've seen you and Lucky there, but didn't know it. So that was kind of cool for me to see that picture.
It's a small world, isn't it?
It most certainly is. It is. Well, now, an adopted Jack Russell Terrier tells his story. Beginning with his long night and uncertain future, Lucky recounts 12 years of traveling across America with a photographer and answering the age-old questions like, who rescued who? So, tell us the story. How did you come to adopt Lucky?
Well, I lived by myself, and at the time I was living by myself, and some friends had suggested, do you ever think about getting a pet? You know, do you ever think about having a dog? Or I had a cat when I lived in Chicago before I was in the Navy, and my cat passed away. Somebody else took her. And anyway, I was on vacation, sort of shooting pictures in Amsterdam, and I had looked at the Jack Russell Rescue of Southern California website. I was living in San Diego at the time before I left, and I sent them something, never heard back. Go on vacation to Amsterdam, I'm shooting pictures. And I must have run into six or seven people with Jack Russell Terriers. And, of course, in Europe, you can take your dog everywhere. I mean, restaurants, stores. You can take them in some stores in California and some restaurants in California. Some restaurants here, like Eddie. And it just got me thinking about adopting a dog and Jack Russell Terriers. And the next morning when I, after getting back, I got up and I went on the website. And there was Lucky's picture. And, I mean, I just loved him, and I knew that he was going to be part of my life and that I had to have him. And so there was a number to call, and I called Jill Aguilera, who raised Jack Russell Terriers and was a key player at Jack Russell Rescue Southern California, explained that I had sent in something over their website, and she said, yeah, I think I saw that come through here. And they ballyhooed it because you live in an apartment. You know, these aren't apartment dogs. And yeah, I understand. I can. Anyway, they were very thorough. They did reference checks. They called the attorney who handled my taxes to make sure that, you know, I would have the money to be able to take care of him. And I called them on Tuesday. And the following Thursday, she said, well, I just got off the phone with the last reference, and if you want them, you can have them. And so here we are almost 14 years later.
Wow, so then you've spent 14 years with this guy, and where did the idea come for the book? How did you decide to write a book about the travels with Lucky?
Well, I had written a book about the agency that I retired from, and it wasn't a very happy book, and it didn't do it accomplished some of the things that I wanted it to, but it didn't sell very well. And I thought, it's just that wasn't very successful. People would like to read, but would much rather read a happy book. Now, the people would like to read a book about a dog. And then, as we were coming back from Vermilion, which is somewhere it's half the time we go to Eddie's, Geneva on the Lake, the other half of the time we go to Vermilion, and Vermilion being the advantage is open year round. But we're driving back, and the idea hits me, wait a minute, he could write the book. I mean, I didn't even. Yeah, I mean, some of the reviews of his book, one of them talked about Millie, I guess, Mrs. Bush's dog, Mrs. Bush the first, not W, but Barbara Bush, had a dog named Millie that apparently wrote a book. I mean, I forgot about this. And none of that passed through my mind. I just thought, you know what? He could write the book from his point of view. What would he say about all of these things? How would he describe them? And I pulled out a pen and started writing. It was all done by hand. I eventually had to word process the stuff, but I just pulled out a pen and the words just flowed on the paper. I mean, I thought, okay, so you were talking about Woodstock at the very beginning. We happened to be in Woodstock on the 40th anniversary of the concert, which was really in Bethel, New York, but everybody, it's Woodstock's the closest place. And we ran into a photographer named Dennis Stock, God rest him, who covered the concert for Magnum. I mean, he was the guy who took the pictures of James Dean in Life magazine about 6 months before James Dean had the fatal car accident. And yeah, just what would he say about that? What did Dennis Stock say when he walked up to the lectern and good evening everyone and greetings to Lucky, and all these people turn around and look at the dog. And so, what would he say about things like that? What would he say about being left in a parking lot in a shelter in the middle of the night? What would he say about the day that his dad came to get him and how he viewed that? And what would he say about the first time his dad had to leave him alone? And I mean, literally, I didn't have to think this through. Well, what am I going to say about it? Boom, it just, the pen flowed across the paper. And I made up an outline of chapters. I mean, the first one, actually, I've got the book here right in front of me, and you'd think I helped write this, I would know what it is. The Day I Almost Died, chapter one. And I put these into a Word template that Guy Kawasaki, the Mac evangelist guru, gives some of his customers and some of the people that help. I've worked with him on some of his books, reviewing photography aspects of his books, and put them all into this template, printed it out, and then just started writing the chapters in this sort of outline that I made for myself. And it literally just wrote itself.
So when you say in your bio that you are the co-author, clearly you and Lucky are so close that that's why it was just easy for these words to flow from your pen. There's just a connection.
It really is. And I mean, from the very beginning, Jill Aguilera, God rest her, the lady who was taking care of him after, so he was at the shelter, and then he wound up at Jack Russell Rescue, and he wound up with Jill Aguilera. And when I went to pick him up, she later told me, I've never seen a dog take to anybody like that. I was, because my big concern was, what if he doesn't like me? What if he doesn't want to be with me? I mean, we've all had experiences where you like somebody and they don't like you, or, I've been out with him. Somebody's like, can I pet your dog? People that I've dated. Yeah, he didn't like them, and, the quick end to a relationship. But what if he doesn't like me? As he writes in the book, there was a forest fire around where the rescue was, and they came through and said, you're going to have to evacuate again. And she said, well, you guys better get going. And I opened up the back door and said, do you want to come with me? And he just jumped in. And, I mean, I had only been walking him around for a couple of minutes to just sort of get used to him. And, I mean, it just did. Somehow he knew that I was there to get him. And he writes about that in the book. And I mean, there's just always been this connection. I can, you know, for example, this morning, I took him out to go to water the lawn, and then I'm like, well, let me take him across the street because he's probably getting, sometimes he wants to come back inside. He's like, no, particularly when it's cold, although we're having wonderfully warm weather this week. And I will sometimes say to him, you know, I know you better than you do. And lo and behold, he hunkered and he makes his deposit. I mean, there's just this, as you put it, connection. And it's truly amazing. And I hope that comes through in the book.
Yes, it comes through just in our conversation right now. I have 11 rescue cats. They found me. This one mother kept having, this feral cat kept leaving babies here, and I finally was able to get her spayed. But meantime, and 11 cats later, I look after these little guys, and there's some of them that I just have that connection with where I could just look at them, and I know that she wants to go eat, and one of them's deaf. And I even thought, wow, what an interesting story that would be to tell a story from the cat's perspective as this little deaf cat might. So I'm here with you. I'm feeling and hearing and getting everything that you're saying. You talk about the book, that it's about the joy of living and being in the moment, and pets really do that for you. Maybe just elaborate on that a bit.
Well, and I've blogged about this because I'm a photographer, and I can't tell you how many times I've missed a picture because I wasn't in the moment. I was looking at my iPhone. You know, I was like, let me better check the, you better check the, you know, email and see what's going on with this or what's going on with that. And back when I lived in California and I was in a one-bedroom apartment and I was working at home, and he would come out of the bedroom and want to play or attention or this or that or something else. And, I was typing away because I had to get, I had a deadline, I had to get something done, and he would just get this crestfallen look and trot back into the bedroom and jump up on the bed. And then I went to, I wandered around, you know, I go to Amsterdam, I wander around, I go to London, I wander around, and I'd pretty much been everywhere but Paris again, and I saw a workshop called The Streets of Paris, and this was in 2000, so it was 10 years ago. Before there were iPhones, you know, the only smartphone you could, well, I guess there was an iPhone, but it was huge and not a lot of people had it. And I just didn't see the point of it. I had a Trio, which you could do text messages on, so I could get back and forth to the pet sitter. And that was really all that I needed. And, you know, maybe an occasional phone call, but it wasn't very functional. And it also cost a lot of money to use the thing in Europe. So it was in my pocket, and I took the best pictures because I was in the moment. And I, you know, when I talk with photographers and, you know, when I have art shows, you know, gallery openings and so forth, you know, I tell people, you've got to pay attention. You've got to be in the moment. And I blogged a couple of times about how lucky, and dogs in particular are so focused, and they're a very good example for us. I mean, if you look at some of the pictures in the book or even one of the pictures on my website, two of the pictures on my website where he's looking, one of them, it says food counter or something like that, and he's looking at a bag on the counter. It's when we were moving to Cleveland and we stopped in Lusk, Wyoming, and, hey, do you mind if I, you know, we have a well-mannered dog. No, that's fine. And so he's sitting there, and he's completely focused on the hamburger that's in that bag. And then there's a picture of Eddie. There's a picture of him sitting, you can see the stools, mm-hmm. and I had the leash up on the counter, and the composition, you know, part of it was intentional and part of it was accidental. But there's a cheeseburger sitting on a paper plate on the counter, and he's so focused on that food. And when he goes outside, you know, dogs, it's like they're reading the news, you know, to them, the sniffing, who's been here and who went there and who did this and who did that and what animal and so forth. That's like us reading the newspaper, and they're so focused, you know. I mean, he's not looking at a phone. He's not looking at anything else. He's completely involved and what he's doing. And, you know, when he and I are interacting, you know, the day that I picked him up, as, you know, a story that he writes about in the book, I mean, I was completely, and this was 2003, so this was way before there were any smartphones of any kind. And, I mean, we were both totally involved in the moment. And, you know, animals are just, I mean, you have that undying, undivided attention of an animal, and it's something that people should emulate, both in business and pretty, if you want to do some kind of art, you want to write, you want to take photographs. Again, we're sitting somewhere having lunch out in Wellington, And I hear this jingle, you know, like, that sounds like Santa Claus. And they actually have this thing, it's half a Christmas Eve or something, and this guy's running around in a Santa suit, except it's shorts, you know, on a short sleeve jacket instead of the whole nine yards. And I initially missed the picture because I'm looking at my smartphone. And I, you know, again, I'm thinking, he's sitting there looking at the morsel of food that he's going to get, and there's a lesson there.
Absolutely, there is a lesson there, and dogs teach us that, cats teach us that, and we really need to embrace that. And speaking of embracing, I did read a blog post of yours that I absolutely love, where you talk about embracing silence. And I mean, think of the communication that goes on between you and Lucky, and there's no conversation. And you talked about how you escape the prison of availability. I love that. Setting boundaries. You talk about to experience the joy of missing out with JOMO, J-O-M-O, and how to avoid digital insanity. I just think we are at a time now where nobody pays attention to anything except looking down at that phone. And so, you know, the gift that you have with an animal where you can communicate and like you say, that laser focus on each other, it's missing, and we need to bring that back.
We certainly do. And I mean, people have been talking about JOMO for years, and there's a new book called The Power of Off, actually written by a psychologist named Nancy Collier, and then an author, it's a self-published book too, I think. It's called The Joy of Missing Out by Christina Crook. It just showed up in the mail today, and I mean, I'm all for this stuff, and I'm like a reformed smoker with this, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, when the first portable phones came out, you know, when Motorola had the brick phone, because it literally was the size and almost weight of a brick, I mean, I was so obnoxious with that thing. It's just long before I had Lucky. And more and more and more and more, you know, there's this expectation of instant availability today. And now if you have a job, you know, sometimes people are told, well, we need your cell phone number because you're going to be available to us. You know, we want you're going to have to answer the phone and look at emails and this and that. You know, the day job that he used to have, my boss was telling me he's getting emails from his boss at 3-4 o'clock in the morning. And this guy would have a sleepless night, and he would get up and pull a crackberry out and start sending emails. And to me, that's just no idea of a life. And as Lucky's time is, the shadows are lengthening for him, you know, and he needs more attention. Mm-hmm. That's my job right now.
Yes.
You know, I'm essentially a full-time caretaker for him. And, you know, if I'm looking at a screen, or I need to be paying attention to him, and I need to be listening to him. I mean, I had a pet sitter come in now so that he's not sitting downstairs feeling like he's left alone.
Oh.
And I mean, animals could just teach us so much. My photography website says I'm not available on my cell phone, and I don't check emails from a cell phone. And it asks the question, do you want your photographer checking their cell phone during your event?
Yep.
You're walking down the aisle, you know. Or it's the reception and, you know, it's time to stuff cake in each other's face or, you know, whatever is going on. And I had, do you want that person, Bill Clinton, God bless him, you know, whether you like his politics or not, if you get 5 minutes with Bill Clinton, you have 5 minutes of undivided attention from Bill Clinton. It's an unforgettable experience. And, you know, it's the only thing that comes close to the attention that you get from an animal.
Mm-hmm.
And so they have so much to teach us, and let's hope that we learn.
Yes, yes.
And take it to heart.
I agree. I love my JOMO. I do not have a cell phone. I have one, but I never use it. So I don't text. I don't do any of that, and manage to live a happy, healthy life. So it is possible.
If you want to write a book, let's see, it was a year ago. So it had been November of 2015. When the light bulb went off and I started writing, and I sent people an email saying, I'm not going to be answering the phone. Sorry, can't come for a visit. Can't do this. And I actually had an autoresponder on my Gmail, and somebody actually, I get this email, please read. And no, I'm not going to. I sent his wife, no, I'm sorry. I'm not going to read it. I want to get this book done.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the kind of, if you're going to do any kind of art, you know, be it photography or paint, or draw, or, I mean, Michelangelo or Leonardo da Vinci, you know, was not looking at a cell phone or taking phone calls.
Exactly.
You know, when he was painting the Mona Lisa. And so, yeah, a year ago, I went off, you know, these big companies have us hooked into, you know, you got to lease a new car every 2 years, and you have to have the latest iPhone that came out, and you have to have an unlimited data plan. And I just last year, you know what, why am I paying $90 a month for a phone I don't use? Mm-hmm. So I have a prepaid phone now.
There you go. I'm on your page. Speaking of pages, let's talk about you writing the book. How did you go about writing it?
I had pictures that I had taken from him. You know, I always have a camera with me. I shoot with a little Leica rangefinder camera that I shoot film, and I develop and print the film myself. And, you know, I had all these pictures, and I was showing them at a portfolio review session in Paris, and I was showing pictures of Paris, which didn't go over too well. And a couple people, oh, do you have anything else? And I showed one of the pictures of Lucky to somebody who started laughing, and he said, you know, that's a really good idea. You know, you should do a project with this. You should really go with it. And it sort of went in the back of my mind, and then, like I say, I'm coming home one day, and you know, you should write. The picture on the cover of the book, I think, is a very happy picture. Dr. David Hawkins, God rest him, an MD and PhD, Power Versus Force, talks about the energy levels, the photographs and pictures and messages and things like that. And I thought, that's a really happy picture. I could use it for the cover of the book, and that maybe this book would make people happy. So then the task is, well, how are you going to organize this? And because it's really a biography of sorts, nonfiction as opposed to a novel, you don't really have to worry too much about plot. I just, all right, well, it starts with the time I adopted him. But wait a minute, no, it actually starts with his long night and uncertain future. And we just carry it up to the present. And I mean, it's just to go through chronological order. For example, again, I'm looking at the table of contents here. So, you know, he's in rescue now. He almost gets consumed by this forest fire. Two guys lost in the woods, set up a flare, and like burned down most of rural San Diego County, you know. And then, all right, so now he gets adopted. What happens there? And then the first time I have to leave him alone, and I take him with me everywhere. And so, you know, there's a chapter, man, about town. And the benefits of, you know, the age-old question, literally, who rescued who, and the benefits of rescuing a dog. Because I wanted to write the book for a couple of reasons. One, I wanted to write a book. I wanted to make people happy. I wanted to make people smile. I wanted to pay tribute to him because he brought me a lot of luck. I mean, a year later, things had really slowed down. All of a sudden, I get a phone call in the clear blue sky. Hey, would you like a job to come work for us? And, you don't understand. If you want the job, you can have the job. I mean, talk about a lucky life. And he's brought me a lot of luck, and he's also had a lot of luck himself. And so we have a chapter on that, and then I took him to training with me. And, you know, again, he talks about, you know, there is the age-old question, who rescued who? And he writes about, so I thought, well, let me write about the benefits that people have of adopting a dog. You know, you have to take the dog out. And there are people who only take their dog out once a day and only take their dog out, you know, for a walk once a week. But, you know, if you're going to be all in, as the saying goes, I mean, you know, anything worth doing is worth doing well. You're going to take the dog out and go places with the dog. And that forces you to get out and exercise, and you're going to be healthier because output is going to probably exceed intake, and your weight will be normal and so forth. And then things, just the fact that the dog forces you to go outside. You know, except when I'm out photographing something, I tend to stay inside and I tend to stay home. And you can't do that with a dog, you know, well, he needs to go. So, well, it's nighttime. Well, it doesn't matter. You know, you take him out, and he writes about an encounter with an owl that we had that would not have happened if, you know, I had not adopted the dog. And so I just think about things, you know, then, you know, the job that brought me to move to Cleveland and him going on trips with me. And I took him on a trip to take pictures in South Dakota and Western Minnesota. And there were some issues with a hotel that wouldn't, you know, they said they took dogs, but they didn't let you have dogs in the room. And then he's had some health issues, which were my fault. Because I gave him too much people food, and people food is not, I mean, we think that oh, I'm being nice to him, and, you know, he looks up at you with those soulful eyes, and you give him something, and you think that, you are satisfying him, but metabolism is not designed for that, and there are things in people food, cheeses and yogurts and things like that, that can cause serious health problems, and he had bladder stones, and so he wrote a chapter called The Plate Cleaners Club, you know, and then we adopted a canary, and sort of chapters in his book of life, so to speak. And then as he's gotten older and he's had some issues with his heart, and that takes us almost to the present time.
Right.
So it's just literally, I just thought about, what would he say about being locked up in that kennel, you know, in the back of that hotel in South Dakota? You know, what would he say about, you know, I was going to go to Paris. I would have arrived in Paris on Friday the 13th, the day of the massacre, at the nightclub.
Mm-hmm.
And I would have been going through that neighborhood, but he was stressed out because of his health problems and having been cooped up in a small hotel room while I was giving a talk. And, you know, what would he write about that? Mm-hmm. You know, and what did he hear me say to the people when I called them in Paris and said, you know, hey, I'm sorry, I'm going to have to cancel. And so again, it was truly a labor of love. I mean, that's a cliche, you know, but that's really what it was. I mean, if I got up in the morning and I looked forward to getting the pen out, but, you know, geez, we got to talk about this and we got to talk about that. I mean, even now I'm thinking about, well, maybe I ever do a second edition of the book or a reprint. There's so much more that I could add. You know, one of my cousins said, you know, you could make this into a book for children.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about the geography and geology and history of some of these places that you visited. And so the sky's the limit, you know, or, well, actually, I think Neil Armstrong said the sky is not the limit. I mean, there's no limit. And not Neil Armstrong, the other one. He's still alive. He's a Buzz Aldrin. He's like 96. Some odd years old, and I mean, he's still going strong. And he says, no, there is no limit. And I mean, you don't limit yourself. You know, just sit down and write, take pictures, do whatever it is that you're going to do. And I mean, at some point, you have to say, all right, we're done. We got to get this published, and, you know, we got to get it on the market. But there is still more that I could do. And then there's the audio book end of it. His veterinarian had said, you know, Dr. Decker, had said, you know, you should really do an audio book. And then somebody emailed me, John Rayner, the guy, John Rayner, Fine Art and Framing, who did a lot of the scans of the pictures for the book. And he's framed pictures for me for almost 10 years now for all of my shows. And he sent me something that I think Guy Kawasaki wrote part of. He said, you know, if you're an author and so this is for all the authors out there, if you wrote a book, audiobooks could be as much as 60% of the market now is audiobooks. And I, you know, saw a couple people at the day job that said, try it. And I'm like, you know, I'm not really sure that I like this. But we were going to South Carolina. And so I signed up and got a trial membership with Audible. And it was A.E. Hotchner's Paul and Me about Paul Newman. And I loved it. And so last October, I started recording. And if you have a Macintosh, it's really easy. You have something called GarageBand,
mm-hmm.
Which is software that comes with a Mac.
Right.
And you can go on this website and get the guy who actually offers you a patch. And so you just record the chapters, and then GarageBand lets you export for Audible, which is part of Amazon. You have to send them MP3s while GarageBand lets you. It's real easy. You just go to share or whatever, and there's a command in the menu, share to disk, and you just save it as an MP3. And then you said you need to get an editing app or editing software, because I found out that every time I ended the recording, there was a click, and they actually rejected it the first time after a month of recording. And the reality is, you can do this in your house. You have to put down towels on the floor so that you don't get echoes from if you have hardwood floors or tile floors. Otherwise, do it in the basement. But every time a bird, he writes about blue jays calling out, but I could never get the blue jay to call out. But I dictate when I was reading that chapter of the book. Yeah, you know, in the chapter, There's No Place Like Home, he talks about, let me see if I can find it here. Chapter 11, page 22. So he talks about the late afternoon sun lights up the spacious living room, and robins, sparrows, and black-capped chickadees sing. Blue jays call out to each other, cardinals tweet, and woodpeckers tap rat-a-tat-tat as they drill into trees to make their homes. A few times a day, the neighborhood resonates with the sound of train horns as locomotives pull trains along the railroad track. Dad and I marvel at how each engineer has a different touch on the horn approaching a railroad crossing. Well, when I was reading that chapter, no trains went by, and the blue jay that seems to be forever in the backyard calling out wasn't making any noise. But when you have to keep in mind that when you record an audiobook, we're right under the departure path for Hopkins. Every time a plane goes over, it starts again. Every time an ambulance goes by, start again. Somebody knocks at the door, start again. The dog cries, start again. And so it's a short book. The recording is not quite an hour and a half, but it was the better part of a month to get it done. And then it was, you know, they sent it back. You got all these clicks in here. You need to get them out. So you download editing software, and it's like you're looking at an oscilloscope. You can actually see the clicks, and it lets you highlight, insert blank space here, and boom, all the, so 8 hours it was done, and then about 3 weeks they sent an email saying, your book's up, your book's live. And, so that's the audio book end of it.
It's exciting. I listened to a little bit of the little snippet you had on your website, and that's where I learned about you hanging out at Eddie's.
Yeah, we talk about Dennis Stock, and then we go into the chapter, Summers at the Lake.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they've just been wonderful to him. And after the book came out, I cut the article out of the paper. I said, here, would you give this to Richard? And he's like, oh, that's you, you know, and da-da-da-da-da. And so now, you know, every time we're there, they're only open from Mother's Day through the second weekend in September. But whenever we would go there, he, you know, would bring Eddie. And Eddie has got to be 80.
Oh, yeah, and a very short season.
Apparently, people have talked to him about that. And the big issue is getting people to work.
Yes.
Because a lot of his staff are college kids coming back for the summer, and
exactly.
They're gone.
Yeah.
And the high school kids have, you know, football games or basketball games, and so that's why they can't do it.
Well, you know what? Actually, it's kind of smart when you have people wanting you to be there and you're not. You create that desire, and so, yeah, you know how that works. Anyway.
Like chasing the butterfly. No, don't chase the butterfly, you know, or if you're interested in somebody, you know, let the whole thing come to you, you know.
Exactly.
But have a mind open to everything and attached to nothing, as Wayne Dyer, God rest him, would say, you know, let it all come to you.
Exactly.
So, yeah, I mean, he's got a great, I mean, it's a place to print money. I mean, it's just literally people are lined up there. And, I mean, sometimes we can't even find, I have to stand. And, well, it's an hour to get there from where I live.
Right.
Yeah, so I'm inclined to stand most of the time anyway, but sometimes you can't even get a seat at the six stools or whatever it is on the comp because there's so many people that want to go there.
It just personifies summer to me. I love it. Well, we're going to begin to wrap up, and so I want your expert advice. What advice do you have for writers and also for dog owners?
Well, for writers, you have to write. I mean, that sounds very elementary, but people, well, you know, I want to be a writer. Well, then pull out a pen and paper or a pencil and paper or get on a word processor and write. You know, there's a wonderful book called by Julia Cameron, The Artist's Way, and she talks about morning pages. And before I started writing any of the books that I've done, I do morning pages every day. And you have something to say, you have an opinion, you observe something, you feel a certain way. Just pull out the pen and start writing. You know, I mean, I had to do a project to get a job that the whole thing was writing. It was writing, R-I-D-I-N. You know, it's like that old Michelin commercial, so much is writing in your tires. The whole thing about whether it ever went any further or not was writing on the quality of what I submitted to them on paper. And I thought, I'm never, ever going to get this done. And I said, well, it's the old Swiss cheese method. I'm going to write a sentence, and I'll get that sentence done. If I could get a paragraph a day done, I'll get it done. So if you want to write, you have to write. If you want to be a photographer, be a photographer. Advice for dog owners, spend time with your dog. Be there with the dog. I mean, take a page out of your dog's book in terms of the focus and the attention and the devotion that the dog shows you. And again, I mean, I go back. If there was one thing you know, one thing or two things that I could do over again. It was all those days. You know, again, I was typing away on the computer because I had a project that I had to get in so that we could get paid and we could, the two of us could eat. But there were other times that I was just surfing the net and he would come out. And I mean, even now, and you know, his time is growing much shorter. You know, I'm really very careful. You know, I spend time with the dog, pay attention to the dog. When the dog wants to spend time with you, do that, because the internet will always be there. You know, Paris will always be there, you know, in my case. But he will not, you know, and this applies to people too. You know, I mean, there's a Reader's Digest cartoon, you know, where that waiter's standing there waiting for this couple to take orders and they're both looking at their phone.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
And, you know, this goes back to the joy of missing out.
Yep.
You know, the world will survive if you don't make that Facebook post. The world will survive if you don't answer that email. You're probably not going to lose your job. And, you know, to my point of view, I don't want a job, or I don't want to work for somebody that is going to require that kind of access. And so spend time with the dog, adopt a dog instead of buying a dog at a store.
Mm-hmm.
And be prepared, get insurance. You know, if the dog is only 2 or 3 years old, get insurance, because the cost of care, I had no idea what, you know, he had an incident with brackish water and wound up with some digestive issues, and it was $1,200, and I'm like, this is going to, you know, kill me.
Yeah.
And there was a form for pet insurance in the vet's office, and I applied for it. And I mean, you know, he had to have a cardiac consult, $900. Mm-hmm. You know, the dog eats something, you know, that could be, you know, when he had the bladder stones, that was, you know, $1,000, $1,100. I mean, you have to be prepared to cover those kinds of expenses.
Well, that's good advice, and you're obviously a good dad. Any dog would be lucky to have spent a lifetime with you. Well, now, where can folks then go to learn more about you, and most importantly, where can they buy the book?
The book is self-published through lulu.com, so you can go to, and I will have one final piece of advice. So let me do that, and then I'll tell you where you can find the book. The one piece of advice that I do have, for anybody, whether you own it, most dog owners are probably not going to do this, but please don't ask owners of pets who are sick if they're going to buy and get another pet after the one they have dies. I mean, I know that people are struggling for things to say, and they want to say something that's comfortable, and that's one of the things that goes around. But it's you know, if we have lucky about that, he would respond like, you know, the servant did in Monty Python and the Holy Grail and say, I'm not quite dead yet. And this, again, takes us back to living in the moment. You know, so my answer to that question, after I get done crying and I collect myself, which
yeah.
You know, could be a couple of minutes, is that, and while we do, he and I do have an appointment with the vet tomorrow to talk about end of life planning for him. I'm enjoying every moment that I have with him.
Yes.
I'm doing everything.
Aww.
That I do everything that I can to make, I don't know how much time he has left, and my job now is to make him happy and make every one of those days a happy one.
Oh.
And I'm sorry, because, I mean, you have to be prepared for this. You know, I mean, none of us are going to be around forever. And, you know, so I'm sorry, but I wouldn't be like that if I didn't love him. As far as reading his story and finding out about his book, he has a website called aluckylifebook.com. And that's all, you know, aluckylifebook.com. It's all one word, .com. And on the homepage, you can actually click through to buy a copy from Lulu. There are a few signed copies. I don't know how many more I'm going to be able to get in here, you know, in the time that he has left. But there's a you can listen to the audio book, a part of the audio book. You can read part of the first chapter. There's a shop page, and it's got links to Amazon. Lucky is on Twitter at LuckyDJRT. Pretty much everything that you would want to know about him, you can find out from the website.
All right, so that is aluckylifebook.com. And Bob, I have to say that you've both had a lucky life, and I feel very lucky to have met you, and we're fortunate that we have had this opportunity to share you and Lucky with our listeners. Thank you so much, and just a big hug to you and to Lucky from me.
Oh, thank you. but I can't.